Morning. It's fantastic for me to be here today. So many, many thanks, James, for inviting me. It's a real pleasure and privilege to be at this conference. I've had the pleasure of attending two of the conferences in the UK as well, and they've both been extremely stimulating. I'm looking forward to a day here with you very much indeed. My title today, as you can see, is Design and Co-Design for Inquiry-Based Learning. My perspective will be from a higher education perspective, because that is my field. But I hope that as I talk, those of you who are here from a school's background and have a particular interest in compulsory education, ICT in that context, LAMS in that context, and students as designers in schools, will see some connections with what I'm talking about. I think there are some really interesting and important issues around the relationship between school-based learning and university learning and the transition from one to the other, which I think that technologies like LAMS can help us to think through and to support effectively. So perhaps that's part of the discussion that we might have as the day goes on. Okay, so before I start, I thought I would give you a little bit of a glimpse of where I'm coming from. Literally, this is my first trip to this part of the world. I'm having a really splendid time. The weather is wonderful. Yesterday I took a day off and went out to Pittwater, which I thought was a slice of heaven. But Sheffield is not so bad. This is a picture. Not really so bad, although I have to say my family are phoning me up at the moment saying the weather here is terrible, you know. You lucky thing. But this is a picture of the University of Sheffield. The big tower is the Arts Tower, but the little building that you see just a sliver of underneath there is the building in which my own team and unit are located. This is the Information Commons building at the University of Sheffield, which is our new library, I suppose, although we don't call it that. And my own unit, which is the Centre for Inquiry-Based Learning in the Arts and Social Sciences, which is a Centre for Excellence in Teaching and Learning, funded by the Higher Education Funding Council for England. So it's a nationally funded unit with a national remit, but based at Sheffield, is located in this rather wonderful new building. James has been to visit us there, which has been very nice. And we have a particular interest in inquiry-based learning. This is our logo and our strapline, modelling the process of research within the student learning experience. And that is very much going to be my focus in what I'll be talking about today. Thinking about what that might mean at different levels of the higher education student experience and in different discipline areas, and in relation to the use of technologies such as LAMS in particular. Okay, three then of the key concepts that I guess my talk will be revolving around. Inquiry, these are some dictionary definitions. The act of seeking for truth, knowledge, or information concerning something, search, research, investigation, examination. So that's really the absolutely fundamental concept at the centre of what I want to talk about. But also, of course, the concept of design. What does design actually really mean? Two ways of looking at it: design as a verb, working out the structure or form of something by making a sketch or an outline, a pattern, this interesting idea of a pattern, or plans. Planning and making something artistically or skillfully. And I think that's helpful to sort of always remember that I think teaching as design, and perhaps learning as design, is a matter of, it's an art as well as perhaps a science. You know, there's a lot of creativity there that kind of goes into the mix. So form or conceive in the mind, invent. And of course, the noun a design, a finished creation, a decorative artistic piece perhaps, or in our context, a plan, a scheme, a coherent or purposeful pattern. And of course, technology such as LAMS enables us to produce learning designs as artifacts that we can share with each other and learn from each other through that way. I wanted to start off with some questions for you. Actually, I'm interested to know how many of you have used LAMS itself in your own work. So quite a lot. Okay, I'm not going to be talking so much about lands as about some of the broader picture issues. But these were some of the questions that I thought maybe I would ask you to start off with. And as you'll be thinking about your use of lands in that context, how do you approach design for learning? Do you see teaching as design? I'm guessing that you probably do, this audience. I don't think that's a given. When we did a piece of research looking at practitioners' early use of LAMS itself at the University of Sheffield, what practitioners told us was we don't think about our practice in terms of design. Design is an implicit concept. It's not an explicit concept in the way we work. But actually a technology like LAMS helps make that concept much more explicit, and that's part of the power that it offers. So I was involved in a project which really was inviting colleagues, particularly in the arts and social sciences, but across the disciplines, to experiment with LAMS for inquiry-based learning. And these were not people who were specialists in information and communications technology. They were, you know, colleagues who are interested in inquiry-based learning. This is one of the things they said, making design really explicit. One of the themes that I really want to put across today, and I know that colleagues later on in the day are going to also be touching on this, is the notion of making design an explicit concept from the point of view of the student, the learner as well. The notion of the student as designer, learning as design as well as teaching as design. And I think that raises a whole lot of really fantastically exciting and interesting, important issues. As for you, which digital tools do you use in design for learning? LAMS, maybe there are others. Maybe you use, I don't know, mind maps, other tools. Do you reuse others' designs? When we asked our practitioners this, mostly they said, no, I don't think so, or not very much, you know? And there's a lot of work there, I think, to be done to support, as we know, the sharing and reuse of designs as artifacts. Do you share your own designs with others? How do you share them? Do you support your students as designers? And how? Is the idea of active design made explicit in your students' inquiry and learning experiences? I'm guessing that for many of you, perhaps it is. I think more generally, perhaps it isn't. Do your students share their designs with each other and you? And what issues arise for you in relation to all of these questions? So those are just some kind of framing questions, really, that I wanted to start with. Design for learning, a familiar concept, I would guess, for all of you. These are some definitions that come out of the UK. You can see the emphasis there fairly strongly on the teacher rather than on the learner as designer. Although I think now we are starting to think much more in terms of co-design and the teacher and the learner as designer. This is just a definition of design for learning that myself and my team offered, intended to be generic and not oriented in any one direction towards teaching or learning. So the planning and documentation of activities, preparation of associated content resources for a learning event of any scale by whoever that might be. A teacher, a learning support practitioner, perhaps a librarian, for example, or indeed a student. Okay, so those are my preliminaries. The way I've structured the rest of my talk, I want to step back a little and talk a little bit about the broader context for my focus on the importance of inquiry and research in the student experience. So this notion of the research-teaching nexus and how we might strengthen the research-teaching nexus, it's a theme that's really very prominent in many universities at the moment, and I will be very interested to hear from those of you who are coming from a school's background about what that might mean, the research-teaching nexus in a school's context. Inquiry-based learning, designing for inquiry with digital technologies and then students as co-designers. So the research-teaching nexus. Just to frame that a little, some of you may well be very aware of a very influential report that came out about 10 years ago in the United States out of the Boyer Commission's review of research-intensive universities, funded by the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of University Learning. And what the commission did was launch a really quite a, quite a challenging critique of the way in which teaching and learning was done in research-intensive universities, really saying, look, the research is at the heart of knowledge creation in these universities, but the kind of teaching that students get in these universities is very much along didactic transmission-based modes. This needs to change. So this is just a quote from the Boyer report. Everybody at a university should be a discoverer, a learner. That shared mission binds together all that happens on the campus. The teaching responsibility of the university is to make all its students participants in the mission. And really, what that meant was they were saying we should bring inquiry and research-based learning into the heart of the student experience within the curriculum and within the co-curriculum, and find ways to connect the curriculum and the co-curriculum. And that really was a very influential moment, I think, in higher education internationally. It led to a lot of developments in curriculum design. It's not, however, of course, a new idea. And this is a quote from an early educational reformer from the early 19th century, von Humboldt, who was the founder of the Humboldt University in Berlin. And his one of his ideas was that universities should treat learning always as consisting of not yet wholly solved problems. And we know that that's still the case today. You know, in our complicated, messy world where we face really difficult problems to which we do not have easy answers, or perhaps, well, certainly not definitive answers, different ways of looking at problems. We are always looking, I think, at social problems in terms of not yet wholly solved. We need to develop in our students capabilities and attributes that enable them to engage with those, with the social world and with complex problems in research mode, whether they're going into academia or indeed mostly into the world of work itself. The same kinds of skills and attributes apply. So this, I think, is a challenge for us now as it was a long time ago. Professor Angela Brew, who is actually a professor here at Macquarie University, has an interest very much in this area of inquiry-based learning. And she has, I think, a very powerful vision to communicate around the notion of the university as a space for partnerships in the scholarship and inquiry between teachers and students. What she says is, we're looking towards a higher education where inquiry can become center stage for both academics and students. Her ideas resonate strongly with a very influential voice coming from the UK, Ron Barnett, who's now emeritus professor at the University of London, the Institute of Education, has this idea of pedagogies of joint discovery. How can digital tools such as GAMS help us to develop pedagogies of joint discovery? I think we're going to find out some answers to that, or ideas about that, later on today. So there's a lot, what I guess I'm saying is, there's a lot of interest in this kind of theme, a lot of projects around the world related to it in higher education. I've picked out some of them here. In the UK, we've had a recent communication to the government from Paul Ramsden, the Higher Education Academy Director, where he's saying that we need really radical redesign of our curricula in relation, again, to this theme of putting research at the centre of the student experience, partly to develop the next generation of researchers, as I say, because research skills, research attributes are so important for the world we live in. And I know indeed that this is an important theme for the University of Macquarie, and I had the pleasure several weeks ago, of attending the first Australian summit on the integration of research, teaching and learning, which was supported by the University of Macquarie and by the Australian Learning and Teaching Council, where we were looking at these kinds of issues. Interestingly enough, at that summit, I think it would be fair to say that we might have identified perhaps a bit of a gap around discussions around where the role that technology might play in this conversation. And I hope that as we move on in the discussions, we'll start to bring communities of interest together in new and powerful ways. Perhaps at the second Australian Summit, we'll have a discussion about the technology aspects of these questions. Okay, I've talked already a bit about inquiry and I guess what I would see as desirable outcomes of higher education. Outcomes, of course, around learning subject knowledge, around developing skills for employability and so on. But I think powerful ideas for us around what we're looking for from higher education are expressed by Barnett, for example, in his idea of critical being, higher education for critical being. Peter Goodyear at the University of Sydney, who I've been working with recently, who took me on his boat yesterday around Pittwater, which it has to be a highlight of my stay here. He has this notion of epistemic fluency as an important outcome for higher education. Baxter McGolder, working in the United States, again, I think a very powerful idea of self-authorship, the idea of students, of authors, of their own knowledge, of their own destinies, and of course it's rather a nice link here with authors of their own learning and learning designs in terms of the concept of authorship. All of these perspectives identify inquiry as really key to the learning experience. Barnett says about critical beings that critical persons are more than just critical thinkers. He's thinking about this as an existential project, really. Students, critical beings are able to engage with the world and with themselves as well as with knowledge. So there's a sense of reflexivity here. Peter Goodyear talks about higher education for knowledge work. And what he says is that we have to think about learning not only as a matter of conceptual change. So learning in order to understand better existing concepts in our disciplines and in interdisciplinary contexts, but we have to be able to engage students in participating in building new knowledge. Okay, so that's again where the research aspect comes in order that they can develop their own attributes for participating in knowledge work and creating knowledge. So epistemic fluency, different ways of thinking about creating knowledge. Self-authorship, I won't read that out to you, that's how Baxter McGolder defines self-authorship. You can see it has an epistemological basis, I think inquiry-based learning in engaging students directly with the experience of creating and building new knowledge advances students' epistemological understandings and their self-belief in themselves as authors, potentially, of new understanding within communities of practice and whether those be professional or academic. It's just a picture of a Venn diagram of the notion of self-authorship. We know that students gain a great deal from inquiry and research. There's a big body of research beginning to emerge telling us about this. Again, I won't linger long on that, but if you want to take a look at the research evidence, have a look at work by my colleagues Healy and Jenkins, 2009, a very comprehensive survey of the kinds of important outcomes that we're seeing coming from inquiry-based learning. What do I mean by inquiry-based learning? Learning that's designed around students engaging in a process of research or inquiry, emphasising their capacity to create their own knowledge, investigating authentic questions or themes, adopting the methodologies and practices of their disciplines, exploring a knowledge base actively, and potentially contributing new meaning, creating new meaning, contributing new knowledge to it. We know that it very often involves collaboration, partnership amongst students and staff. And the whole notion of inquiry-based learning is very much that the inquiry is driving the experience, that all the resources, the activities, the facilitation is designed to support that process. And students are given guidance on inquiry methods, how to frame good questions, for example, and so on. And very often as well now, I think we're seeing a much stronger emphasis on the importance of students sharing the outcomes of their learning and their inquiries with each other. So creating new products, new artifacts, sharing with each other, but also with a wider community, what they're doing through their learning. So genuinely authoring and taking it out there into the world. This is just something we a little diagram we use within SILAS, just to really highlight this emphasis on student inquiry at the centre in thinking about design. That's one possible design process. Inquiry process. Start at the top, identifying a topic and existing knowledge, moving around that cycle. But in different disciplines, inquiry takes different forms. And so we need tools and methodologies to help us think very flexibly about how to support inquiry that does take different forms and that's iterative and messy very often. I think there's a strong affinity between the ethos and philosophy and commitment of inquiry-based learning and Web 2 and Web 3, perhaps. This notion of Web 2 of, you know, really being about ownership, about participation, collaboration, social networking, users as producers, creating, generating, repurposing, all these kinds of things, creating our personal learning environments and networks. But, and we know that in many ways things are moving very fast. I love that story that James just told us about the child who'd never seen a cord on a phone before. You know, that's fantastic. But at the same time, we're seeing research coming out into the student experience of using technology that starts to question this notion of the digital native and starts to, I think, make us look again, problematizing that and saying, well, yes, okay, students may well come to university with a fluency with technology, with a certain amount of self-confidence in relation to technology, and fluency in the social uses of technology, some kind of self-confidence, and some level of skill with using Google. I come from a library background, so I know also what the limitations of those information literacy skills can be. But actually, are students in a position always, or even very often, to transfer their practices and what they understand about how to use technology in their social lives, and at a relatively, let's say, superficial level? Are they in a position to transfer that to the purposes of intellectual inquiry and academic endeavour? And I think there are very real questions about that and how we can support them better to genuinely become, as it were, digital natives and designers of their own learning. I want to just say a few words about a piece of research that I've been carrying out, looking at how students longitudinally, through their undergraduate programs, experience and understand inquiry. Because it struck me and my team a number of years ago that actually, although there has been a lot of research on students' conceptions of learning, and their approaches to learning and how these link with teachers' conceptions of teaching and learning, we perhaps don't have such a clear idea of how students, particularly from level one, I would say first undergraduate year, really understand inquiry and research at that level and how they develop their understandings within the disciplines as they move forward. So we started to do some research on this. And this is just some of the themes that came out of our work with first year humanities and social sciences students. So we really identified here very, very broad brush, four broad ways in which students at level one during their first year were thinking about inquiry. One of the issues that came out very forcibly was the potential for mismatch between how students were understanding their task in carrying out inquiry and how their teachers and tutors were understanding and intending the task to be. So, for example, many students at level one talked about inquiry essentially as information gathering, as information seeking, almost as if you know that it was almost the beginning and the end of the inquiry task was to go out there and find information. Some students actually talked about this very quantitatively. It's about gathering as much information as I can, you know. Some of them had a more nuanced view. It's about gathering relevant information. But What we also found was that this kind of view of inquiry was very often linked to quite to less advanced epistemologies and understandings of knowledge and of learning. So students might come to university at level one with understandings of knowledge as absolute, you know? There is a correct way to understand things. There's a correct... If I can find the information, that's what I need to know. Of course, we know that knowledge is contested. It's contextual. We wanted to move students towards more relativistic views and epistemologies, but perhaps they don't start there. And their ways of thinking about inquiry reflected these kinds of, perhaps we could say, naive epistemological understandings. And understandings about learning as being about learning from what's transmitted to them in transmission mode, accepting, as it were, the truth from the authoritative figure, rather than putting themselves in a much more active role. Some students were thinking more about, in more sophisticated ways, about inquiry as sense-making. So inquiry is me going out there, finding information, but actually trying to make sense of that for myself. So there was a difference there between students in those two categories. More of our students in this study, fairly small-scale study, qualitative study, but more of them in level one were much more oriented towards the information gathering, almost for the sake of it, than for the sense-making idea. The sense that almost the sense-making was going to be done by their teachers rather than by themselves. And then some first-year students had this more advanced knowledge of inquiry as knowledge-building. And the idea of student inquiry itself could encompass the making of new meaning in, let's say, humanities subjects such as English literature, and indeed knowledge building. So they could start to see themselves as creators of new knowledge that could make a difference within a field or a community. And again, this was just a very small number of those students at level one. Some of them saw inquiry as evidence-seeking. It's about going out to find information to back up my ideas. Again, you could say, that's kind of maybe a step along the way, but perhaps not the whole story. One or two had, a more sophisticated idea of inquiry as participation. I want to get involved in inquiry so that I can perhaps make a little contribution to thinking in new ways or developing something new. These kinds of issues that came out of this research helped us to think about our own conceptualization of design for inquiry-based learning, helping us to think about, well, what are the purposes, really? When we are, our purposes, our pedagogical purposes, when we're designing for inquiry, what kind of mode of inquiry do we want to engage students in? What kind of process of intellectual development do we want to engage them in? And developing their conceptions, if you like, of inquiry. So we produced a little 2x2 diagram based on these ideas, which has been used by us at Sheffield in context of staff development and thinking about design for inquiry-based learning. You can see on the vertical axis we've got a dimension that contrasts inquiry for building new knowledge with inquiry for acquiring existing knowledge. And then one of the things that came out very strongly from our study was this notion of the importance of opportunities for students to frame their own inquiries sometimes, perhaps not always, but sometimes, right from level one. So we differentiated between student and client-framed inquiry and student-framed inquiry, posing the questions, identifying the problems, finding the cases that are complicated and difficult, and setting themselves those problems or setting each other those problems. And we also identified within each of those categories more scaffolded or less scaffolded forms of inquiry-based learning. And we gave them each of them a name, as you can see, and with a nod in the direction of Baxter McGolder, up there in the top right-hand corner, the idea of authoring, students building new knowledge through student-framed inquiries. And you might think, that's probably something that most students perhaps might not encounter until they reach perhaps the third year or even beyond at master's level. But we have seen examples of inquiry-based learning designs at level one that are starting to engage students with authoring right from the word go in small-scale, well-supported ways. So this is where we've been thinking in terms of four or eight, you could say, inquiry modes, identifying where the stance of the student is crudely something like, well, what's the existing answer to this question? The question I've been given to go and explore. There's an existing answer out there, or there's a body of evidence about it. I'm going to find that. And so we have, for example, our first year lawyers, 500 of them, on a big inquiry-based learning module where they're set on a problem-based task, and they go away and they find existing examples of case law to answer specific questions. And indeed, some of my colleagues have used LAMS to take them through that kind of process. A different example would be, you know, what is the existing answer to my question? So students formulating their own questions, but still the orientation is towards existing knowledge. An example in history where, again, students at Sheffield are using Web2 to explore information sources in their area in that kind of mode. In English, producing how can I answer this open question? So a question given to them by the teachers, but very much in the sense with the message that this is not a question that has already been answered. This is an open question. There are many different ways of looking at this and engaging students with that kind of thing. And then authoring in my own teaching with colleagues in information management, in a very small scale way, we invite our first year students to identify meaningful questions around information management within the university context, the university as a case context. We ask them to identify questions and then do a little exploration, which actually does explore some small corner it's asking a different kind of question in a different kind of setting. So trying to encourage them to think about themselves as authors of their own inquiries. And again, we've used LAMS to think about how to take them through that process. You can see on that diagram the way that you might map problem-based learning in the red, more tutor-directed, and undergraduate research, as it's sometimes talked of in terms of the research, the honours project or the research dissertation. We've also started to think about how we can think about progression through the levels in relation to this model. And we might think of it in a linear way. So, and in some disciplines, that might well be the way that makes sense, to start, as it were, at the bottom and to snake around through the levels, taking students increasingly through a more sophisticated modes of inquiry. But there might be an argument for a spiral inquiry curriculum. And you might want to start students off with small authoring activities. James has just told me there's 5 minutes left, and I haven't even mentioned LAMS yet, or hardly, but I'm coming to it. I think issues and challenges in design for inquiry-based learning, large cohorts, how do we do this with lots of students? We need to clarify our purposes and modes of inquiry at different levels. We need to think about high-impact inquiry activities right from the very beginning, including opportunities to frame their own questions. We need to avoid tasks that reinforce what I've called here less availing epistemologies and self-concepts. So what I guess I'm thinking about here is that when we set students information-seeking tasks, we need to be aware of ways in which students might interpret or misinterpret those kinds of tasks or not connect them with the more important purposes that they fulfil, and make sure that they understand why they're gathering the information. We need to support the transition from learning-oriented to knowledge-building inquiry, think about progression, embed support for information and digital literacy development, create the conditions for productive collaboration, connect students' inquiries to the scholarly and research activity of the university, might LAMS help us do that, support students as designers, and support students to document and share what they do. I'm going to talk very briefly about this, but I think I know that we're going to have more discussion of this in a moment. We did some exploration with lambs. We looked at it in an old version, and you are users of a cutting edge version, so this will perhaps not apply. But it was helpful for us in thinking about it. On the one hand, practitioners were saying, oh, lambs is great in this version because it's helping us design sequential inquiry sequences. And that can be good and positive in some contexts. All these things can be good, but inquiry sometimes very often looks much more like that. It's an iterative, messy process. And in that version, lambs didn't strike practitioners as so suited to open-ended, emergent, student-led, inquiry-based learning. Lambs has changed, and I think our thinking has also developed. This is the area that I think is most challenging and perhaps most interesting for us to think about. Design tools for inquiry-based learning, then. I think we need to build in a high level of flexibility so that we can, if we want, to constrain the pathways and the processes and procedures of inquiry that students go through, then we can, but we can give them great freedom as well. We need to consider the four modes of inquiry. We need to learn from research in the computer-supported inquiry learning field, in science learning, which has been going on for 20 years, and bring that together with what we're doing. We need to have lots of opportunities for practitioners to reflect and discuss. We need to offer examples of designs that include very loosely structured and student-led designs for learning. And we need to consider student-facing design functionality and co-design. Just a few words about this idea of learning as design. One of our pilot users said to us, it's like constructing an orchestra. Lambs can, if the conductor-tutor wishes, really impose strict limitations on the students. You're not going to start playing, playing as in the violin, until you finish this bit. Really, what I'm trying to do is learn how to orchestrate less. How might the students themselves orchestrate the learning experience? And then somebody else said, I just really love this idea of sort of working with students, sitting there and saying, OK, we've got this course module to do. What's your favourite approach? Do you like doing this or that? And actually putting it together with them, having them make the decisions about how they're going to learn as well. I'd never sit down and do that in a virtual learning environment. It wouldn't occur to me. But with LAMS, I think I can do that. And that's exciting. So thinking about tools that enable students to design and manage their own inquiry processes with, of course, support, and use design representations themselves as resources for reflection and sharing with each other. I know there are some really fascinating things going on in schools. We might think perhaps school students are leading the way in this, which again is an interesting linkage for us to think about. When we're thinking about design tools for inquiring students, do we need the same or different tools for teachers and learners? So I'm thinking more broadly than LAMS here. Are the same tools going to be right? Do we already have tools that we can use? What might a design for learning tool look like if it was focused on use by learners rather than teachers? What kinds of support materials and processes would learners need to assist them to use such tools? Again, just a few thoughts. I know that Debbie's going to be talking more about this theme later. Highly flexible research planning features for students, I think. Integrated activities to support research processes in different disciplines. So in the sciences, for example, particular methods around question formulation, hypothesis generation, making predictions. Can we build in activities that support those very specific inquiry processes? Can we integrate design for inquiry, for student inquiry guidance, akin to the kind of pedagogical planners that are offered to teachers, but for our students, into these kinds of systems? I think there are some very interesting questions for practice here. I think there are also some really interesting questions for research. These kinds of questions, how do students experience and carry out co-design for learning? Don't think we know a great deal about that. We need to know more. What kind of tools do they use? How do they respond to existing tools? And what are the pedagogical and logistical issues that relate? We're just starting to explore these questions. It's a very exciting time. And that is the close of my presentation. I started where I began with some core concepts, which I'd like to leave you with. Thank you very much for listening. I look forward to our further discussions this morning.